You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikkel in Seattle.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
Wes had a little bit of a perk in how he said it today.
You were laughing.
I'm Perky Pete.
Because he just sounded a little bit like, yeah,
hey,
it's Friday, let's do it, this.
Thank God.
It is, yeah, TGIF. Mm. Makes me miss the actual, like, remember actual TGIF, like on ABC? It was like Family
yes.
Matters.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes.
Dinosaurs, which was the redheaded stepchild of all of them, but it was...
Now they're all on Netflix.
Oh, is Dinosaurs?
No, I'm sure you can get repeats, but isn't the other one on there? Full House?
Fuller House,
yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Ugh.
The Dinosaurs, like a 10-year-old Wes McDowell was pretty excited about Dinosaurs.
Did you have a backpack or a lunchbox?
I didn't go that far with it, but my favorite part is now, knowing, like, as an adult, the voice of the mom dinosaur was Lucille Bluth from Arrested Development, like the drunk mom.
Oh.
It's the same woman who did the voice.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
That's
Fran Sinclair was the name of the mom dinosaur.
God. Wow.
Something for the kids out there. You never thought you'd hear that today.
Look that up on YouTube.
Yeah. What are you guys up to on this lovely Friday?
Gosh, I'm so glad it's Friday. I know we don't talk about dates
too
much, but
Tim, everyone's going to be listening to this, and it's going to be Monday.
I know. So sorry. Well, just be with us for a moment in our celebration that the week is over. I'm so happy.
Last night was one of those like late nights where I needed to be around for dev support in case I was needed for, you know, just with all due respect.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so many episodes of Agents of Marvel that you can watch back to back.
Nice.
So you or your nerd husband that likes that? Or are you the
nerd?
No,
I actually asked if we could watch it. I'm super into it right now. And then I just have my MacBook open in case he gets in touch with me. But I do think, honestly, this might be a really good topic to cover for an episode at some time later is for those Mercy-esque clients that are like shifting the scope on you, and they pay you well, they're really nice, but everything is like it's a ton of pressure. Is it worth it
all the time though?
Is it fair for them to corner you the way that they do? I mean, I think
you mean like late at night,
in general
if it's all the time,
cracking the whip all the time, Asking for you to deliver by midnight on a Friday, you know, shit like that.
No.
But how much are you letting them do that, though? That's the thing, too, I think.
Yeah.
Anytime I've been in that situation, it's probably been my fault for letting it get that way. Do you know what I mean?
It's them.
It's them, yeah.
And then the moment that you've got support staff for your business in the mix, there's a domino effect because they get thrown under the bus in the interim too. And so it has ramifications on whether they want to support your business as well.
Maybe it's not worth it at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
But there are a bunch of scenarios about this. I mean, there's a number of positives. So what do you weigh and what wins? Like, where's the fine line? It might be an interesting topic to cover at some point.
Where do you draw the line?
I think it's just like everything considered, like, would you get rid of this client based on this? Me personally, like, okay, so I've got several friends who are realtors, for instance, and they always, like, you're out with them on a Friday, Saturday night, and they're like, oh, God, sorry, I have to take this call.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, it's Saturday night. You're kind of drunk. Like, why are you talking? He's like, no, if I don't take this call,
yeah,
I could lose it. I have put the kibosh on, like, up front. I don't answer emails or calls on weekends, period. Like, even if something comes through, like, on a Saturday, even if I work on it, I think I've mentioned this before possibly, but even if I do have time and I work on it on Saturday, I'm not telling my client I'm working on this right now. As far as they know, I keep business hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how I kind of keep everything
compartmentalized.
Once you start answering those calls and answering those emails at night, then it's like, oh, I guess she works at night, so,
and they get used to it.
So, but when I mention a number of factors, you know, it's very situational. I totally mean it because I work with a number of developers that have full-time jobs. They moonlight for my sure. business.
Yeah.
So there's no work around there. You work evenings and weekends for them to support my agency. Mm-hmm. That's what I prefer because they know their shit.
Yeah.
So where do you draw the line there?
Because that's almost a second shift for your business is things are being worked
but
on.
But I'm willing to do it because
and I'm the same way.
It's less money for me. They crank it out super fast.
Mm-hmm.
There's loyalty there. There's trust where they like, I at one point last night was like, I'm signing off. Are you going to be okay? And he's like, I won't let you down. I'm all good.
There you go.
Nice.
Thanks for letting me know you're signing off.
Yeah. That's and isn't that the respect was there because you've built it and he understands and you understand.
Right.
Sorry, we're shifting gears. I wanted to like save it.
New topic.
No, it's good. It's better than talking to all this hot dinosaur stuff. So that's what people tuned in for. But that's like where an instance like something like Basecamp can come in so handy because my developer is on the other side of the world. He's working while I'm sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
But the assumption is never that I need to be talking to him while he's doing it, but it may be a different nature of what you're doing versus this.
Right.
But so I generally, what I do is I set tasks on Basecamp and they do it. And if they have questions, they have questions. Things can get delayed that way. But it's generally kind of, I put up here's what has to be done. Here's the time. Here's the deadline for it. And even you could be working at night. I don't care, but just as long as you do it and then. But I guess it's different if they have follow-up questions, blah, blah, blah.
I was going to say, going back to your original kind of wondering if this is borderline where you say goodbye to a client or do whatever, if you were so new in the situation and you were experiencing this, I'd say, hey, this is what happens, right? We get this. You're going to have these kind of clients. But you're so well into your career and your business, that's a good answer. I think the only one that can really answer that is you. It's like, if that's really getting to the point where it is that bad, and it ruins the rest of your work day or week, you gotta think, you gotta consider it, you know?
And or marriage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a lot of time, that, you know? And it,
now
yeah, see, like, I mean, look, I'm getting the calls while we record right now, but am I answering it? No.
This is important podcasting
exactly,
time, you guys, you
exactly.
know? Not time for clients right now, but something there's always time for, and that's a brand new sponsor.
Drum roll.
Especially a good one.
Drum roll.
Especially a good one that we love this much. Let me introduce you guys to a little company we like to call Skillshare.com. I've been talking to them for a few weeks now, and I got a trial membership, and I've already gotten several classes in this past couple weeks.
Nice.
It's amazing, and it's allowed me to quickly pick a few things up that I needed to know when dealing with things I had to do with clients. Like, for instance, I just set up a Google My Business listing for a client, and I wanted to make sure I was doing it the proper way so they could get listed in the little map section on Google.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know how to do it the right way, and I went to Skillshare, and there was a whole little course. I got in and out. It was great. So, you know, if you're listening to the show, you're obviously looking to keep learning. So that's why this is such a good fit. So you can be a more marketable designer and make more money. So that's what we're all looking for. And Skillshare, just so you know, is an online learning community with over 15,000 classes in graphic design, illustration, business development, like how to get your own design business off the ground and more. You can learn everything from logo design to visual thinking to painting watercolors. And the classes are perfect for the professional designer looking to get a leg up at work or the freelancer who wants to attract more clients and build their brand. And this is one of the cool things. The Skillshare teachers include working designers with actual years of experience and AIGA award winners, such as Ellen Lupton and Debbie Millman and Seymour Schwast. So we got unlimited access to all this for a low monthly price. Never pay per class again.
That's great.
It's just all
that's cool.
Encompassing. It's for one price. And like I say, I just took the Google My Business class, as well as one on Facebook ads that convert. You know, we did that episode of Facebook ads a few months ago, but I just wanted to kind of brush up
good
on that because I had another client who needed that. So both were just really super comprehensive and to the point. So it allowed me to learn everything I needed to without a lot of fluff. So I got in and out and I was able to get those tasks done quickly and right as a result. So, and here's the best part. Skillshare is giving our listeners a month of unlimited access absolutely for free.
Damn.
Imagine the classes you could take in a month.
Be a pro.
It's free, but I don't think you'll give up your membership when you're done, though, because you'll find it that valuable. So go to Skillshare.com/graphic to redeem your free month. Again, Skillshare.com/graphic and get your free month trial. All right. So this episode is kind of an interesting one that I've been doing this for a little bit, mm-hmm. without really knowing that it was. And what we're talking about is value-based pricing. So in gearing up for this episode, because I already know my version of it and how I do it, but I wanted to come with some more, ammunition to the table. Yeah. So I was listening to a few episodes of the Sean West podcast, mm-hmm. No Relation. I know there's a guy named Sean on there. There's not a guy named Wes. So I don't know. I'd be interested to know where that comes from. Maybe he's just looking for a Wes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll ditch you guys for that. But anyway, so there's like a few episodes on there. I want to say like 309 through 312 or something that are all kind of geared around this topic.
Okay.
So I'm going to steal a little bit from them just to warn you, just to warn Sean West too. We're going to kind of go high level view of what value-based pricing is. But, if you're really interested in the topic, I highly recommend going and listening to those episodes because they're really going to go in deep.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk more about it, on 5,000 level view and talk about our own experience.
Cool.
If we've done it, how we've done it, if it's worked out, blah, blah, blah. So, first of all, have you guys ever attempted to charge by value, not by time?
I'd say that's been the biggest shift probably I've done in the last year or so. And I didn't even realize it was almost out of the means. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you look at when you review a month or you review a year, I was kind of getting to that frustration of the hourlies and all these other things that were not working well. And slowly investigated, read up, looked at some great blog posts and stuff about this and started doing it about a year ago. I totally get it now and reading into it, and I'm sure you've probably found a lot of good touch points on this, why it's so much better for us to go this route. I just prefer it. I'd rather put a emphasis on value rather than time, because the value is everything from in your past. It's what you bring. It's the service you bring. It's the changes you can bring for a client. I'd rather talk that than time, because time puts a limit on something and puts a limit on what you can make.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're charging by the hour, it's like, you're just trading your time for money. Like what is your client isn't paying, like their end goal is not, to have you work 20 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Their goal is to get what you're going to, the value you're going to give them.
I know this is really awesome, because I always hesitate before I hit send with FreshBooks,
mm-hmm.
because it's itemized by hour, quantity and everything. And that's all transparent to the recipient.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just about the hours that you put into a single component of a large project, mm-hmm. or an icon or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's that they're going to get the best design option for their brand that there is from you.
And I don't use that area of the FreshBooks invoice in any way.
I don't know that there's a workaround.
Yeah. You have two sections. You have the section that's based on unit cost, and then there's a section that's based on an hourly. You just fill out, mm-hmm. you can X out all the other ones, but I never use the hourly one. And because then again, you're right. There's the transparency, and I don't even have that discussion.
Right. I see how you mm-hmm. mean. I do it both ways.
Sometimes if there's a reason to, or I think in a lot of our contracts, we have that thing that says, if you go above and beyond what our service agreement value price thing is, revisions and all that, there's an hourly at that point, just so you're covered.
So how do you work this, mm-hmm. you guys? How do you work this for ongoing, longstanding clients that you bill, say, monthly,
mm-hmm.
based on hours collected?
See, I never,
at the end of every,
for me, like if it were
it's gonna, always project based.
It's always project based, and then if
yeah, not
if
for
it,
me.
If it if mm-hmm. it goes on,
mm-hmm.
it's based on another phase of the project with a new quote. It's never like Well, actually, it's not like there's some things I do in terms of SEO ongoing, and that's just a fixed monthly price, and it has nothing to do with hours worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on this is what's going to happen for that money every
month.
Okay, that's interesting.
And that's all it is. Yeah.
There you go.
So I might be at 60 hours for a month for this particular client, or I might be at 20, but I invoice them on the 15th of every month. And based on the campaigning that they've got going or, you know, whatever it is, I mean, it's just up and down. Like crazy.
Do you do like a behind the scenes? So it's like more of a behind the scenes hourly and these are the reoccurring bills for clients that are ongoing.
They see everything itemized.
Got it.
To know differentiation of, okay, this was that marketing design, and then this was a totally different project, but all collectively.
Yes.
Yeah, batch them.
Yes, exactly. But you do it more unit cost or based on your hourly?
Based on
hourly. Got it. So I kind of do the same, but I do it
4 hours.
But
a day,
I do it.
3 hours.
I'm not
a day, 2 hours a day.
I'm not transparent with the hours. I just put a unit cost, and that's only two clients for me because that their system of ever changing demands each month. They're very exclusive. Everyone else is kind of more project based.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to be hard to ever like switch anyone.
Exactly.
You've already got
exactly
to this model. But it's basically like the first thing to think about is the mind shift that you have to have, where you have to, it's kind of a mind shift for you, but also for your new clients, where they're coming to you and they're asking you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking like, how much is this going to cost? But everything you say and do in these first interactions, you have to position yourself as an investment to your client, not as an expense. Meaning you have to be talking about, you know, what this is going to do for their business. The money they're putting into their business is going to output this much. So you have to get out of that mindset. That's the first step to it. And it's hard for a lot of designers to wrap their head around that. Particularly if you don't feel like you have a lot of experience, you know, in actually turning a profit
mm-hmm.
for a client.
But it's the first step, you know, in getting out of that. And someone's mm-hmm. you have to take a risk with something that you're doing if you do want it to grow. And I get that feeling. And I think a lot of younger, less experienced might feel a little afraid to do that. But look at all these case studies. If you look at people who have done this, they've all said, yeah, there's that moment of kind of like, it's like that whole saying no thing, like saying no to clients for certain things, for qualifications or for minimums. Once you do it once or twice, you realize you've now elevated to another level because you'll eliminate people that don't understand, you know, how you might be changing, let's say, your pricing. So it's a good step to start dabbling in and seeing how that works, specifically with new people, that you got to take advantage of a new client if you are thinking of doing something like this.
Yeah, but I also think this is kind of a more advanced maneuver in mm-hmm. that I don't think we should be telling people starting fresh in their career to start charging like this.
I agree.
Because you have to know, because this is going to be
So this
I got from Sean West's podcast, mm-hmm. And I thought it was really insightful for value-based pricing to work. You need to be able to answer yes to these three questions.
Okay, good.
Every time, so starts off basic. Do I do client work? Yes, I'm not mm-hmm. working 9 to 5. Do I customize each project, each individual client's needs? Versus, is everyone just kind of getting the same package
sure.
all the time,
it's totally
regardless
different.
Of what they need? Most people can answer yes to those two things. But then here's the interesting one. Will my client get a real tangible financial value from this project? If you can't answer yes to that, then this won't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's two components to that. So there could be based on you don't think this project is really set up for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a nice to have kind of thing. Or maybe you don't feel confident in your ability to get
results,
to move it forward for them.
Yeah.
So if you can't answer that yes to that, then you're probably not ready for this step, but it's still an interesting thing to start thinking about.
And that's great because that relies on experience and skill. So you're right. If you're quite young in this,
all the stars in alignment.
Yes.
For whatever it is they need in order to, like, is this actually going to be a return on investment, or is this just something that your client wants, but it's really, you know, we've all had that before. We've all had the client just want something for no good reason.
Sure. So
and you can't really pin.
I like the
financial value to it.
I like the way that was last point is worded, because I think that's something we could should be answering. Are we doing that on period? Are we giving them value, and are we making something for them that's going to help change the scope of their business?
Right.
Yeah.
And like, that's what we should all be aspiring to do.
Totally. And I think, you know, I love hearing what, talking with other creatives and hearing how everyone's really, look how much more people are digging into the discovery section of that. We weren't even hearing this a year and a half ago, you know, and now it's there. So people are really, we're playing a lot more roles than just being this person that just designs something and hands it off.
Yeah. I mean, that's where, when I first got into this, like, oh, I'm a graphic designer. I'm just going to design logos and that's that.
Yeah.
Without giving it too much thought. But now the part that I love is the part where I'm actually coming up with those strategies and making a difference. Like I love that kind of business aspect to
mm-hmm. Oh my God. So many other layers, to play with and be a part of. And I think it's also great too, when you get a client to say, wow, I only was expecting this, but you brought this in addition to just design. So
maybe they weren't aware
that
you were more of an encompassing one-stop shop in that respect.
Yeah.
I know it actually bothers me. I think we've mentioned that terminology that's like a pet peeve. Mm-hmm. I hate it when people say graphic designer, or I'll see an email exchange that copied on.
Good
that
thing
it
we're on
says
the deeply
UI.
Graphic design
Uh oh.
It says UI designer, UX designer, and I'm like, Have you noted what I've been doing for you lately?
And the only reason I think our industry is getting more of a spotlight is because common people that have nothing to do with our industry are appreciating branding and understanding how it makes it's an emotional tie to what what you buy and what you purchase and as a consumer. So I love that we're getting to be more well-rounded as, let's call them designers or whoever. God, we're going to need a new name for that. You're right. What are we?
Yeah.
Oh no, that's okay. I mean, with all due respect, I shouldn't expect for any contacts of mine to be like, oh, sure. Or creative consult is copied here. But feel free to reach out to her with questions. Like, no, I wouldn't expect
No,
that.
I know. I know.
It's fine. It's fine.
But it's changing times.
Okay. Exactly. Okay, so the first thing to think about when you're doing this is, okay, so when we're talking about value-based pricing, the way that works is, instead of I'm charging this much per hour, what you want to do is figure out by talking to your client through discovery. And as Sean West guys were talking about, there's a whole different thing called value discovery, which I haven't gotten too far into with them. But I think you can intertwine that with the kind of discovery we talked about. I just want to I want to know what all those questions are, but come back to you later with that. But basically, you need to figure out like a real number of how much the client will benefit financially from your work. So that's got to come from the client to a certain degree. Not you. You can't make up that number and say like, it's going to be worth this much. Like, it's got to be coming from, you know, well, things we're going to talk about in a second. But then what you want to do is you want to price your job as a small fraction of that amount, so that you can go to them and say, here's what this is going to cost. Here's the investment it's going to be. And it's going to be, you know, $10,000, but it's likely to lead to $100,000 worth of business for your company this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a no-brainer price, right?
Yeah.
Like, what company wouldn't invest $10,000 to make $100,000? That's a good ROI.
But you're just one fraction of investment. Right? I mean, there's other things they're paying for. So how do you
this project will yield that much money.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like this website, if we do everything correctly, we've done math, we figured out how much you're, so like things you want to look at and ask them how much business they're doing now. How much is this project likely to increase that business? So like base it on, you know, user experience studies. Like let's say they've got something on their website that's completely outdated in terms of UX, and you know that by doing this, you can increase conversions by 5%.
Okay.
And then this other thing will increase it by another 10%. So it's basing it on what they're doing now and then doing kind of figuring out a conservative estimate, you know, of what you can reasonably expect this to do for them later. And then the big thing is how much is an average customer worth to them over a lifetime? And that's got to come from you talking to your client about their, you know, their avatars and all that stuff. And that's gold, because when you do all this stuff together, when you put the final price together, you can say, okay, this website's going to cost $10,000. That if we just get five customers through your website, it will be paid for. But this is how many customers we're likely to actually get through the website. You know, 100. So like, just when you put it in terms of like that, where you say, this is what it's going to cost, here's what it's likely to get you, that's value-based pricing. You know, and that's going to, and it's, and by the way, I should say, you're not couching it like this to the client. You're not saying, I'm charging you 10% of what we're going to get. This is just kind of all internal stuff that you're doing these calculations based on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do they give any kind of insight as to how to calculate that same idea, but for a project that is much harder to value how it's going to increase revenue for them? Do you know what
you
I mean?
In terms of like a non-website? Like
of course. Yeah. I mean, logo, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's where it gets a little muddy to me, and I wish I had more of an answer for you.
This may be more applicable for website work, right?
Yeah, so basically, I think there is a way, and I think the what they've got going over there is like a there's a paid kind of course they do.
Yeah,
that kind of walks you through all that to extract what that number would be, because there is a number. You know, it's a matter of how you get there. So yeah, if they have shitty packaging now, and you can point to this thing on the shelf next to it that outsells it, and you can probably, I mean, I don't know how you quantify that this is selling based on the packaging versus this, but there's got to be studies, focus groups, things that have been conducted in the past. Logos, again, I don't really know how you quantify that, but I think the thing to keep in mind with value-based pricing with logos, I think the takeaway I got most from that is you're going to charge like a smaller business less, because they stand to gain less from it than like a Coca-Cola.
It's the size. I think they're in that case, it's the size of the business, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But even then, even with Coca-Cola, how much more are they going to sell based on the new logo? Maybe they'll sell less. I don't, I have
it
no
could
idea.
Be.
Like that's,
but I think you nailed it by saying keep it to the size of the, and everything I've seen that has talked about the cost, because let's look at it as a logo package. If you put that together and you have your idea of what, how you build it, all your steps, you can package that. Where you change the price is the size of the company and the exposure of that and how much more it means to that company. Do you see what I mean? So shop down the street is A, you know, mid-tier company is B, and then doing something for Target, I mean, whole other level. So maybe
I see what
that's where you throttle it for something that's not as tangible, I think, as the website. Because the other thing that I have to, where I have to consider
and
too,
Target's really easy. You just add one more ring around.
Of course,
right?
Yeah,
done.
And you add the dog, add the dog, add the dog, and
you know,
you're good.
There's a lot of like scenarios that we could discuss that's a little bit more on the nitpicky side. But I'm thinking about those 12 cans for Budweiser that sold like hotcakes, and it's not to say they were struggling with sales prior, but it's just smart move campaigning in the heat of NFL season. You run with something like that, and you have to know if you're on creative team or leading a project of that sort that you just look at it optimistically.
Yeah.
Or the what was it, Coca-Cola last year that did all the names?
Yes.
Like they put every like individual name on the cans.
Similar example.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was, I used that in my class the other day because the only reason they were, able to do that was because of digital printing. They were able to, they didn't have to do the plates for all of those names. And they were able to, because of technology, someone in, you know, someone probably brainstormed that 20 years ago and they couldn't do it, but now you can. So again, that's the whole idea. Like, you brought this great creative to the table. So is that your value? Like, is that, like, are those the things that you, you know, you found a way, you found a solution? So I think that's what I'm looking at. Every project's so different. And if we can find a way to do something, that's the value that I feel like I can add. Like, if we're doing a, let's say a restaurant, and I'm doing everything for their branding and everything, he has costs in construction, in architecture, in, you name it, in rent and all that. So I can't ask him how much he's going to make with this and let me have a percentage of it. So maybe the way to do it is the scalability of the company and the exposure of that, what this is going to be. So we can at least build these same models.
Yeah. And that's probably going to work better for something like that versus, I mean, for a website, there are a lot of things you can point to.
Yes.
Versus a logo versus packaging. Who's really to say? That's where it gets a little kind of muddy in my head.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing I just do websites now, so I don't have to worry about any of that. Yeah. But, but yeah, I mean, it's really an interesting thing because you can look at so many different factors on a website, and there's so many studies that have been done.
Mm-hmm.
You can really say, and most clients, when you, I've gone through the discovery process with many clients now, and they're always able to, we're always able to narrow down an average lifetime value of a customer. Is it perfect? Probably not perfect, but it's good enough, and it gives us a place to start from. Like, and I will say, with value-based pricing, I think the higher value that your client's customer has on them, it's kind of easier to sell this because you need fewer of them to justify your cost. For instance, I'm working on an insurance website right now. Super sexy, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's insurance, so it's like the average value of a client, it's like commercial insurance, is like $25,000. So it's like, okay, if you to get one customer through this website, it's more than paid for.
Yeah.
So that was just a super easy sell at that point. Probably should have charged more.
Yeah.
At that point, but but it's like, but I'm still not to the point where I know exactly how to communicate.
I hear you.
Here's exactly how many people we're gonna get, but one thing, like, this is the biggest takeaway from those Sean West episodes, and I'm totally just gonna steal this, and he hit it over and over again. So, you know, when you're talking to a client up front and you're asking, what's your budget? Or they're telling you what their budget is. This is deep now. The client can't know their budget until they know the value of the project. So that means whatever they come to you and say, our budget is this much. That's just coming from a place of
a spreadsheet,
what they think they want to spend.
Yeah.
But imagine if someone came to you and said, I have $2,000 for this project. But then you came back and said, okay, after all the stuff you're talking about, and you've kind of figured out a plan, and you figure out together, what I can do for you can make you $100,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost you $10,000. Do you think that? I mean, now that $2,000 is like, okay, maybe we can come up with more if it's really going to get us this result in the end. So whatever they come to you up front with, they're coming from that from a place of thinking of you as just an expense.
Yes.
They're not thinking about the investment part. They're just thinking of, we need this task done, and here's how much we have for it. But it's your job to talk to them, figure out the value, and kind of figure out a way to bring real value to them, and then you can charge more for that value. Make sense?
Yeah. I wish I could do that.
It takes
more
research, and all these questions always make the client feel like it takes them off guard oftentimes, for one, because they're having to share an income line with you, means of income line. And most of it oftentimes makes them uncomfortable. At least that's my experience.
Well, and you can get around that, you can get around that up front when you have these first conversations, you need to tell them, like, this is what we're attempting to do here, and it's for your benefit. We're trying to get you guys extra money through, you know, through the value I can bring you. So it's going to require communication. We need to know what's working, what isn't working, and how much, you know, what you're making is kind of a direct relate. Like, we need that in for the calculation. Once they know that it's for their own good,
they might open up with it. Yeah.
Well, everyone has, in
sometimes
my experience.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Yeah, I never make it about me. It's always about the client. That's understood. But oftentimes for that contact, it's just sales. It's just a car salesman sales pitch. Yeah, I get it. I know you're supposed to tell me that.
Well, then I think that's either the wrong client or you're not saying it right at that point. Like, there's, because there is, and I'm not saying that as a slight to anybody, but.
Oh, I'll always get the look. I'll always get the look. And I work for amazing, I support amazing people. But it's just an uncomfortable conversation oftentimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the nature of the communication. And that's okay. Once you practice it more and more, it's like, got to bang this out. So
it's like us talking about numbers too with each other. The more we do it, I think the more comfortable we are. And I think a serious business person is, if asked that by someone like us, I feel they're going to, if they can't understand what we're trying to do with that, then maybe it's not right. You know, it's like, I think that's a very smart way to go. I wish it was more part of what I can talk.
Yeah, it can be telling to a degree.
It's so tough to kind of figure that out for me as a business owner to have all these ways of talking with each one, because they're all so different and what we do for them is so different. So I'm gonna stick to the idea that just being more transparent with the client up front is a good thing, and hopefully you get them more at ease in talking about these kind of things.
Yeah. And I, like, they know that I'm coming in more on a consultant level than a designer level. So once you start asking like monetary questions as a consultant, they get it. Yeah. If you're a logo designer asking how much money you make, like, that does seem weird at that point. But, I gotta tell you though, like, when I do this, I don't have any sense of, apology in my voice. Not like a robot, but I'm just like, this is just I ask in a very matter of fact way. Like, we need to know this. It's
that's important. You need to own that part of the conversation.
The delivery.
You need to own it. You need to own it. That and confidence needs to shine.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, like,
it does make a difference though, honestly.
Oh yeah. And in qualification, like, we've talked about that before. I will always kind of broach the subject of money, but now I'm thinking, after listening to these guys, I'm thinking I might want to retool how I do it a little bit. But I feel like in qualification, when I would ask, you know, do you have a budget in mind for this project? And then if they say no, you're supposed to say, okay, well, what is your yearly, you know, revenue per year? How many employees? You're supposed to just kind of figure out with other methodologies, like, can they afford you or not? And I had one guy who's just like, I have no idea why you need to know that. And I was like, you are not a good client for me.
Yeah.
I didn't say that, but it's like, if you're going to go on the offensive right away, then that's a red flag. I'm not going to, not going to waste my time any further. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you can have these kind of conversations up front, you know, they're kind of game for it.
What ended up happening then after you left that meeting?
Oh, it was just
you did not further the...
Yeah, it was just a phone qualification meetings over the phone are mostly busts, to be honest with you, because it's mostly people who want to spend $2,000 on a website.
And they're fishing.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which tells me I have more work to do on my homepage to make it, to make the messaging more clear, yes. And I thought I had done that, but apparently it still needs a little bit of work. So.
Yeah.
Well, there's always that stuff to learn. There's always.
Oh, yeah. And I think totally no matter what you do, you'll still get people that just literally think $2,000 is a lot of money for a website. Like, no, it's really not.
Yeah.
But
I love.
Well, I can bang that out for you in that at that cost for a single landing page.
Yeah.
They don't ever want that.
But do you want to do that? It's, you know what I mean? You're, then you're juggling 18 landing pages instead
sure.
of...
Sure! I'm the guest.
Yeah, of course,
remember.
That's right. Oh, I love that. Like, I love when I hear young designers who have been either dabbling in freelance for quite a while, all of a sudden they're like, man, what was I thinking when I was just charging $500 for this or, you know, whatever? And it's like,
oh, I
there's
know.
A lot more well, work involved. And it's like, so I that's why I always preface the kind of conversations like we're having right now with that. We could tell you this and it might sound foreign and you might even try it, but until you see that you need to make these changes, I think it's really tough yeah. to do these until you're at that moment where you're like, oh, it's time. I got to do this.
Right.
You got to go through the experience right. a little bit to understand how this is going to be
of
benefit,
course.
You know, yes. to you. Yeah. I think
but
we can tell you things
there.
All day long,
I remember.
But you have to experience it.
Exactly.
You know?
We've all been there. I remember in the early 2000s charging 40 an hour.
Yeah.
We've all been yeah. there.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But, and it's a part of it's a part of the path. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't designing nearly the shit I'm designing now at that point. I mean, it's a part of the building process.
Yeah.
I do think that. And I think that it's important to say again that, you know, there it's a growth upward
yes.
curve of growth.
Right.
And I don't ever want to tell
yeah.
like very young new designers, you should be charging $150 an hour because you shouldn't yet.
No.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. that's
you got to make
and I,
work
I
your
never
way up.
I want people yes. Don't charge Fiverr prices,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you need to pay your dues and you need to get your feet wet before you can start charging the big bucks and hopefully getting to this value-based pricing model. So
you know where you know what made me made a big switch too with it was I think when you get to a certain point, what I felt was I was almost like punishing myself for working too either too quickly or too efficiently. And you couldn't, mm-hmm. if you kept it on the hourly, I mean, I remember a first few things, I was doing 0.25 hours, like, you know, cutting it down to a quarter mm-hmm. of an hour charge. I was like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
It was like, so I'll never forget having someone that said they did a tagline on the spot for someone, a friend. And a friend was like, you're creative. What would a great tagline be? And she came up with it. And she even said like, oh my gosh, thank you. Like, does this mean I don't have to pay you? And she goes, oh no, I'm still going to charge you. And she goes, but that only took 5 minutes or not even 5 minutes. She goes, but it was because I'm experienced and I know I've done this 1,000 years and I know how to do it.
I like that example.
You know, and
I like that example.
Right. And it's we got to think that the same way with even if we nail it on the first try or if we do something so good.
That's cool.
The only reason you didn't get that by luck.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That was quality 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're being paid so well because you have that experience that you can be that
mm-hmm.
quick.
And see, and when I get to see people who are a few steps behind where we are with Sync, and they get to that part where they're like, whoa, I did this so quick. And should I still charge what I told them? Should I discount? I'm like, no, this means you're getting better. This means you're also learning how to deal with a customer and a client.
Yeah.
A lot more too, because
not
you're
only
listening.
Should you charge, but you should charge a rush
exactly
fee because you came
exactly.
up with
exactly, and you don't have to and be transparent with
right
it.
On.
Yeah, be transparent with or not transparent with it. Just add
yeah.
more because it's so true, man. That's what comes with getting better with every aspect of what you do. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's to getting better. So yeah, before we get on with this, I would just want to tell everyone to. If you got a lot out of this conversation, and I mm-hmm. really think it's a good one, do go to that Sean West podcast. I think it was episodes 309 through 312 or something like that. Much deeper view into it from someone who has been doing it much more than I have. So, you know.
Yeah, it's and it's
a,
great
a,
to share when you,
course
I think
you.
That just to find
I
someone.
I love your humility.
Well, I mean, I know most things, Mikhail. I don't know everything.
Everything.
Yeah. I need at least another week for that. But you know who has all the humility in the world, but
oh,
shouldn't
here it comes.
Because they're amazing?
Here it comes.
FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks, we love them so much because they basically allow us non-accountant types, designers, consultants to, you know, to invoice our clients super easy, saves lots of time, and you get paid quickly. So they've been completely redesigned from the ground up to make it super easy to use for designers and the way you work. They showed it to me, and it's really designer friendly. And you can create and send really professional looking invoices in under 30 seconds. And with literally two clicks, you can set yourself up with FreshBooks Online Payments and end up with money in your pocket in, okay, yeah, that's data again. We love it. With FreshBooks payments, over 60% of invoices are paid within one day. I can attest to that.
Yep, same here.
Almost everything I send with FreshBooks gets paid pretty much on the spot. You can take credit cards. You can have PayPal be an option. You can just require them to send a check, which is kind of what I know we're in 2017. I should be getting the credit card payments, but they take so many fees out. So I like the checks.
I know. I know.
FreshBooks doesn't take the fee out. It's just the credit card companies do. So can't get around that. And with the new projects feature, you can share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. So it's basically a good place to kind of keep everything in one spot. What do we love here? We love the multi-currency invoicing. So if you have a client who's overseas, you can send it in their own currency. And automated late payment reminders. Awesome. I had to use one of those the other day.
I know. So official.
Yep, had to do it. So official.
Haven't yet. And yeah. I always think about it. I haven't yet. I need to do it.
Did it. But as soon as I did it, I got an email back right away. Like, oh, sorry, we'll get right on that. So it's gold.
Oh, good.
And you're not the one like writing the email.
Yep.
It just comes officially from them. So you're not the bad guy. And support, you know, Mikkel calls all the time. They're sick of her. Not really. Zero attitude. And a real life person usually answers in three rings or less. Mikkel can tell you they answer in less than one ring. Mm-hmm. They just know she's calling.
They do. It's so cute. I love calling
they're
them.
They're just on hold with you right now, right?
She's got them on retainer. So to claim your 30-day unrestricted free trial, 30-day unrestricted free trial, go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Again, go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic. And then enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks. All right. So, listener questions today. I sent it to you guys.
Yeah.
Do you guys have it open? Can you tell me who it's from?
It's from Adrian Ellis. Is that correct?
Adrian Ellis.
Yeah.
And read the subject line and then read the question.
Is this tacky? Question mark. That got our attention, didn't it?
Yeah. And by the way, to be fair, like that's the newest listener question we have, and it kind of skipped to the front of the line just based on like.
Hey, so there's your hint. If you want to get up there.
Yeah. Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want me to read it?
All right. Yes. Yes, please.
All right. She reads, "Hey guys, new listener here. I'm a young designer working in-house, but hoping to transition to freelance in the near future. My biggest concern is the dreaded attracting new clients. What is your opinion on getting a decal of my website to slap on the back of my car? Nothing huge or obnoxious, only about the size of a bumper sticker. I've never seen this, and I've never seen anybody doing this, so I'm wondering, is this tacky or is it desperate?"
I want to do this. I want to.
You're going
to
do this?
Yeah.
I know a great company that does these window cling decal pieces, mm-hmm. too.
I think,
well, like
I think it's a great
ones.
Idea. It just, but it has to be done right.
Tastefully and creatively. Yeah. I think it was like the answer.
Yeah, and not nothing tacky.
Yeah.
Like all are welcome here with a heart.
I think you got to think too, who you're going to attract with that. Right. And that might just be an ongoing mess of just very small clients.
Do you want the potentiality of those stuck in traffic with a cigarette mm-hmm. in their mouth going over
so
the
pass? So if you're ready,
I think you're
going to
be designing a lot of DJ posters. Yeah.
And vape.
Could
and
be.
Vape packaging. They go hand in hand somehow. I get you.
I almost submitted a proposal for a super high-end vape company here locally. They have amazing branding work already, the nicest that I've seen. I didn't get it, but I really wanted it.
Oh, I passed on one. I can't get behind something I just do not. We talked about that before. Like, I just had nothing to offer. I didn't even want to try. But anyways, her question, I think she's just got to be ready for who you,
please send us your drafts. I want to see them.
Yeah, I'd love to see what she does. Maybe a
tastefully is the key answer for me.
Maybe more of a rather than a bumper sticker. I think obviously you don't want to do anything that's going to damage.
No, she said size.
You don't want to do. anything that's going to damage your car be permanent. So like a cling type of thing, like you were saying earlier, Mikkel, something on the back window. Hey, if you could do something and you come up with a clever line and it, then it's your website, why not?
And or hashtag.
Maybe. All you got to do is if it backfires, you just take it off, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
no one's going to call you after
that. The good news this year, it's no investment, you know. It's,
maybe a few bucks for
the $10 investment. But I think the thing to the bigger thing to think about is not if it comes across as tacky or desperate, but again, who are you going to attract? Who is your target audience? And do you think, I don't know, like I know who my target audience is, and I don't think they'd be hiring me based on a cling on my car. But you know, if you're you said you're brand new, so you're probably going to, you know, smaller businesses, logos, that kind of thing. It could work, but the good news is you're not out any money if it doesn't work.
No, you're right.
Right.
Yeah. And just be ready for who you're going to get and what that job might be. Mm-hmm. Hey, one of them could lead to something and bigger and better. It could be the first step in what you're doing. But wow. I mean, yeah. And make sure it's website. Do not put a phone number.
Yeah. But then if your phone number is on the website, then
I think if it's,
and it's just one step away.
If it's who I looked up, she's in Virginia.
Well, wow. Let's just give away all her, give her phone number out too. Why don't you?
And her website. I wanted to know where, because it's like, I think you're right. Where you live is a big part of that. But you know, like if you have that on there,
I think if you're living in a place with a lot of small business in town, that might be something. But if it's just kind of, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It could go either way.
Yeah. Let us know.
I say, why not?
Follow up.
Live a little.
Follow. Yeah. The fact that no one's doing it is probably the best part. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And is that, should we read too much into that? I don't know.
You got nothing to lose.
Well, they do say sometimes if something's not being done, it's because there's no like market for it, but
if everyone's zigging, you should zag. So like, I think sometimes that you could think that way too, you know.
Yeah.
Let us know what happens. We could do a whole.
It's a good experiment.
Yeah,
this might be a follow up episode.
I think oftentimes I'm just thinking about the old school No Wave Your cars. I remember seeing that, or like Mary Kay products. For makeup,
yep.
People would these consultants, and they'd drive from home to home, and they would decal the shit out of their cars.
Yeah,
with that pale pink Mary Kay.
Yeah, the pale pink, exactly. So,
what about?
I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, now I got it.
I mean, you wouldn't do something as extravagant, but those people, oftentimes, you do see cars that for consultant basis.
Yeah.
I think more or less, but.
And how nice is your car?
Again,
oftentimes,
yes.
Oh, that's a good point. Oftentimes,
you have to minimize your business
to pay for your car lease or payments if it's all decked out. If it's not all decked out, have you heard of
this?
Yes. Yeah, the companies that'll pay you to wrap your car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's.
No, but, I mean for tax purposes.
Because you can write off your car.
If your car's decked.
Okay.
Oh, so you can write it off as a company car. But I think you have to bought it as a company car, or like leased it through the company.
And a percentage,
things that,
and it's only a percentage of your fees based on, let's say, if you're using it. But what if she got one of those cool things, like those magnet things that like Pizza Hut puts on the top? You know, that's like a light up thing. It almost looks like a taxi sign.
Yeah.
You see, like I wonder, like find one on Craigslist and I don't know.
Nick,
she's giving me all these great ideas.
Take it to the next level.
I love it.
No, but I think the best thing though is if it's a beater car, then it doesn't speak too highly of your business. If you have a nice car, then I'm like, oh, she must be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
No idea what you drive, but I think that might be.
So rent it if you don't rent a car for a day and try it out.
Yeah. Get a Mary Kay pink Cadillac and put it on there, and then you're set. All right.
Thanks for the fun
question. We're having too much fun with that question, but it's a good one. And let us know what you end up doing and if it ends up working.
Please do.
Even if you get like a couple of clients out of it, it's definitely worth it. So let us know. All right. We'll keep sending in those listener questions to questions@thedeependdesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. And of course, we love the audio questions. So record an MP3, send it on over via the emails.
Mm-hmm, the internets.
And the interwebs. And yeah. follow us on Instagram at Deeply Graphic. Okay.
Please do. Say hello.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Y'all go ahead and have yourselves a great weekend, okay?
Oh, it's so Friday right now. I can feel it.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. My brother says it all the time, and I can't stand it.
Okay. It's drink o'clock.
All right. Well, with that in mind, keep designing. Catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Design Cast. Okay.